Would everybody take a place, please, so we can get the meeting started?
So now that I've lived it, next time you're here, we will probably not vote. Until you live it once, you don't know that it's not quite.
It's very dramatic. It's very dramatic space.
People to move around.
It is 1:15. The meeting is supposed to start at 1, so I'm calling the meeting to order. Few things I'd like to remind you all that if you speak during the meeting, please clearly for the microphone over here announce your name and the campus with which you're affiliated or whatever your role is. If you are presenting a motion or something that needs to be put on the screen in the back, Jean is helping us coordinate that, but make sure that you announce to her clearly which motion it is that she needs to put on the projector so we'll get that done correctly. First order on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the September 15 minutes. They were distributed electronically by email, I believe. Are there any corrections to that motion, to those minutes? Corrections, adjustments, deletions, or additions? Hearing none, then we're ready to vote. Is there a motion that we approve those minutes as distributed? Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Ayes have it. Reports from standing committees. We start with the Rights and Responsibilities Committee. Professor Randy Lowell, are you ready to give us a report? By the way, if you, the podium is here, if for whatever reason you don't feel comfortable coming up here because you may be afraid to trip or whatever, there's a microphone down there. You need to speak clearly into that microphone, or I can hand you this microphone, which has a cord in it, so make sure that we have a good recording.
In Rights and Responsibilities today, we worked on creating a possible calendar for tenure and promotion process for mid-year hires, and so we were able to. We used, as a starting point, Columbia's mid-year T&P timeline and adapted that to what it might look like for us. Between now and the next meeting online, we're going to create a clean, pretty version of that so that next meeting we can present that as a motion. And other than that, we spent the remaining time just discussing some of the other issues that we're going to be working on some more later this year. That's it for my report.
Thank you for that report, Professor Lowell. Welfare, Professor Ray McManus, who's the chairman of that committee, I believe is out there peddling his books or doing something wonderful like that, so I believe Professor Downs is going to give that report.
I will do my best not to channel Ray. No, just kidding. I like Ray. It was business as usual for the Welfare Committee. A reminder that on January 15th in the Capstone Conference Room, we're going to be having the TMP workshop. All of those who are involved in the TMP process, academic deans, anybody else who's involved in the TMP process, we encourage you to be there. We want feedback from you about the TMP process as well. Duffy Award nominations are due by December 1st, so get those to whoever collects them on your campus and then send them on to Ray. The Plyler Award nominations are due by December 7th. We're working on getting the requirements finalized. We're pretty much there. We worked on that today, and so we should have those finalized And that's the reason why we've got a little bit later date on that one, just because we needed a little bit more time to finalize those requirements, but they're pretty much done. And then the faculty welfare survey will be sent in early January. Again, that's confidential. Please encourage the members of your campus to take it so that we can know how faculty welfare is on the campuses and whether we're improving or not on any of the measures that we have. Any questions for the welfare committee? Thank you.
As you all know, I'm accident prone, as you may remember from the last meeting we had, so if I'm the one tripping here, please pick me up. Systems Affairs, Professor Kajal Grosho.
System Affairs had an old motion which was ruled substantive last time, which was proposal to change BLS BOL4 in language requirements. And under new business, we are going to bring a motion for associate degrees that are under one campus and is going to be extended to Palmetto College campuses. Thank you. Questions?
Next report comes from the Executive Committee. Our Vice Chair, Professor Tom Bragg, is going to give that report.
The Executive Committee met on October 16th. And we discussed inviting Dr. Elliot Vittes to be added to the agenda for the Executive Committee and to the Senate agenda, and also inviting Provost Joan Gable to the next Executive Committee to present. From that meeting and from the meeting today, Executive Committee will be proposing two motions under new business, and these motions will be presented by the Executive Committee at-large member Dr. Chris Bundrick, and Faculty Manual Liaison Officer, Dr. Andy Yingst. Also today, we discussed some possible changes to the process for how ad hoc TMP committees are formed, particularly as it relates to faculty service responsibilities. The Executive Committee discussed the means or possible means of evaluating and reducing the service commitments on regional campuses. And we also discussed charging the Welfare Committee to look into matters relating to summer pay for faculty. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Bragg. Next report comes from the Palmetto College campus's Faculty Manual Liaison Officer, Professor Andy Yink.
I'll have a little bit to say on those two motions that are coming from Executive Committee, but other than that, nothing to report.
Reports from special committees. We start off with the committees on libraries. Professor Rebecca Freeman, is there a report?
No report.
No report. Committee on curricula and courses, Professor Robert Castleberry.
Courses and Curriculum Committee has met once since my last report to you. The next meeting will be 3 days from now. when we will deal with 153 separate proposals. I remind you that interested individuals should check the USC faculty webpage for reports on the Senate's actions and the committee's recommendations. A number of programs will be revised next year. All of the Darla Moore School of Business degrees will be changed slightly. There will be some changes to various computer science degrees and the computer science minor. The economic degree will be changed a little bit, as well the mechanical engineering, nursing, and some of the HRSM concentrations. Concerning the business majors, there were some changes to the general education component of that major, those majors. Previously, students met the ARP requirement by taking Math 122 and then generally another math course of a higher number. Starting next year, they will take, again, Math 122 and Stat 206, which is a new course, Business Statistics, which is cleared for ARP credit. Also, an additional 3 to 10 hours of specific coursework that was part of the original degree are now just 3 to 10 hours of elective coursework. Several of the English 280 series courses were changed. They are considered to be special topics courses. As I understand the process, faculty who are currently approved to teach the course don't need to be reapproved each time the topic changes. As has already been worked out with Chris Nesmith, the topic titles will be sent to Chris, who will send them on to Arts and Sciences for vetting and forwarding to the registrar. As previously indicated, Monday the committee will consider 153 proposals. Actually, that's up to 157 as of this morning. A large number of these involve changes to course prerequisites, which includes the change for accounting 225 and changes to an abundance of chemistry courses, including 111 and 112. Primarily, those prerequisite changes did previously said you have to have this course first. Now it says you have to have that course with a grade of C or better. There will also be consideration of changes to programs in social work, PEAT, exercise science, chemistry, computer science, and art. The provost website should have a link to all of the proposals that are being considered that you should have access to. I remind you that both before and after each meeting of the Courses and Curriculum Committee, I report to contact people on each campus. Again, if you would like to be part of that listing, please send me an email. I'll be happy to add you to the list. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Castleberry. The Committee on Faculty Welfare, the report will be given to us today by Melanie Lane, Professor Lane.
The Columbia Faculty Welfare Committee discussed its recent email notification for faculty stating that employees covered by the state health plan can receive influenza immunizations with no copay through in-network pharmacies and providers. The committee will no longer need to provide funding for these immunizations. The committee will reach out to the Student Financial Aid Office to begin planning for improved communication to faculty regarding available resources for tuition assistance and financial aid. The committee is also preparing for Provost Joan Gable's visit, which is planned for the committee's next meeting on November 16th. If you have any Palmetto College faculty concerns you wish for the committee to raise in its meeting with Provost Gable, or any questions about this report, you can direct those to Shelley Jones. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Professor Lane. The Faculty Board of Trustees Liaison Committee, I'm the representative for that. I believe the Board of Trustees met at the same time we had the Executive Committee meeting. I'm going to ask our Chancellor, Dr. Susan Elkins, if she has a report for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the October 16th meeting of the Board of Trustees, approval was granted for the campus master lease for USC Lancaster. Prior to that, in September, volleyball was reinstated for women at USC Sockahatchee. And then on the agenda for the November 20th meeting is the approval of the USC Sumter $500,000 grant for planning of the science building. So those are the three major meetings and the results that relate to Palmetto College. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Elkins. The Research and Productive Scholarship Committee, the report will be given by Dawson Jones. Professor Jones.
So the Research and Productive Scholarship Committee is still working with the Shaw Award. The Welfare Committee had asked that the Research and Productive Scholarship Committee actually take an active role in reviewing the applications for the award, the review packets for the award. So we're going to take a year to figure out how that's going to work with an initial review going through Research and Productive Scholarship before selections from that pool move up to the Welfare Committee. So the Shaw Award will not be offered this year, but instead it'll be offered next year so we can work out how we're going to split the responsibilities for review between Research and Productive Scholarship and Welfare. It also works well with the rollout for the Plyler this year, and then it'll be the next year that we'll have the rollout for the Shaw Award. So with that in mind, we're not going to hold the Research and Productive Scholarship website release for the Shaw Award announcement. Instead, the library at USC has put together some good tutorials on grant writing and application for different awards, and we're going to have those as the featured articles to begin with. And 11 faculty members have already either created their faculty profile web pages or they're in the process of doing so, and we've clustered those based on discipline, and we're working on some ways of networking using that format. So we're going to go ahead and release that so people can see what their fellow faculty members are doing and hopefully be encouraged to create their own pages and sort of build off of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Jones. The Palmetto College Campus's Academic Advisory Council, Professor Chris Nesbitt.
Good afternoon. The remaining members of the Academic Advisory Committee were appointed since our last Senate meeting. They are Ron Cox and Lisa Hammond from Lancaster and Ray McManus from Sumter. And as a reminder, the other elected members of the committee are Shelley Jones from Extended University, Suzanne Penuel from Lancaster, Sarah Miller, Sockahatchee, Eric Reisenauer from Sumter, and Avery Fouts from Union. The committee met on October 23rd. And approve some minor changes to the BLS and BOL program of study forms to improve the advising process. The committee also discussed, but did not yet vote on, potentially changing the committee's name to avoid some confusion with the Provost Advisory Committee. Names are very similar. And also for potential new proposals to come forward. Again, we haven't voted on these, but for information purposes, modifying the degree requirements for the BLS for the number of hours currently required at the 400 level to change that to the 300 level or above due to some differences among numbering systems within various disciplines in the USC catalog. Number two, modifying the requirement that disciplines in the BLS be limited to particular groupings or tracks, which would allow for more flexibility for students majoring in the BLS program. The third is the inclusion of the new course, which was approved in the spring by the Columbia Faculty Senate, Palm 495, Service Learning, which we're proposing will be approved as an additional option alongside Palm 494, the internship course. And finally, the creation of a new Palm course to replace University 401, primarily to avoid confusion, which is the senior capstone course in the BLS program. It's also an option in the BOL, primarily to avoid confusion with this course, which is also being offered, as many of you know, for the graduation with leadership distinction in a one-hour version. It's causing some issues among them, for a lot of different reasons, among students, instructors, and even in the registrar's office. Committee plans to vote on these items and send them to System Affairs, hopefully before the next Senate meeting in February. Also, just as an update, the proposal, which was approved at the last Senate meeting, to add the Native American Studies and Health Education, Behavior, and Promotion tracks to the BLS degree are currently in the approval pipeline on their way eventually to the Columbia Faculty Senate. And I'm also working with the registrar on the best way forward to change our current RCAM designation to our current Palm designation. That's my report. Question.
Presumably one of the problems with changing RCAM to Palm is that Palm is a designator that any changes would need to go through the Columbia Senate, while RCAM courses are still the property of the state.
Yeah, as I think it's a very good observation. RCAM courses are under our purview, this Faculty Senate body. Palm courses currently are in the Columbia catalog and are under the purview of the Columbia Faculty Senate. I think that's an issue that probably needs to be looked at. I might ask Cogill and System Affairs to get with me on that to discuss. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Nesmith. Other committees, the Committee on Conflict of Interest, Professor Naomi Bohanek is not here today, I believe, but she has no report, I was told. The next report comes from the Provost, Palmetto College's Campuses Advisory Committee. We have not given that report normally as part of the agenda, but it was brought up that it might be a great idea, so Professor Sarah Miller is going to give us that report.
The Provost Advisory Committee met on May 12th of 2015. We met with the interim provost. The main reason that I'm presenting this today is because we want to make sure it goes in the minutes. Since we now have a new provost, I'm just going to put it in the minutes. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Professor Miller. That brings us to unfinished business. We have one motion that was carried over from the previous committee meeting. This motion came from the Systems Affairs Committee regarding the proposed changes to the BLS-BOL degree. And I'm going to let Professor Cogill introduce that motion again.
Maybe third time is the charm. It's coming around for the third time. The proposal was to change BLS, BOL foreign language requirements. The other one. There you go. Any questions? Patrick.
Is it not true that this came out of the committee, but the committee recommended that this motion be voted down?
That is absolutely right.
Know which way to vote now, right?
Any other questions, discussions?
If there's no further question, we're ready to call for the vote. All in favor of this motion say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no.
No.
The motion is defeated. New business. We have a motion from the Citizens Affairs Committee. Kajal, you want to present that motion?
The System Affairs motion under new business is that we move that all associate degrees currently on Palmetto College campuses are Palmetto College campus degrees, and as such may be offered by all Palmetto College campus. The Senate charges administration of Palmetto College campuses to pursue the necessary approval to ensure the ability of any Palmetto College campus to offer such degrees. Little point of information, individual campuses may find their equivalencies for this. Questions? Yes.
Bundrick Lankster, this is maybe what you're getting at with the question of equivalencies, but would this then require that all of those degrees be standard across all the campuses?
It would be, I think from the discussion we had, it would be up to each campus to present any difficulties or non-equivalencies to System Affairs for approval if they feel that they need approval. Does that make sense?
It then feels like we're talking about different degrees, but you answered the question. Thank you.
The original proposal from Sumter did not change anything. They propose an equivalent course that is offered on Sumter campus. It meets the same course description.
And of course, there's no requirement that any campus offer those degrees if they're unable or unwilling to do this, with the ability to do so if they choose to do so, with everybody on equal grounds.
Robert? Dr. Castleberry? Okay.
Any other questions?
This motion came from committee that did not require a second. If there's no further discussion, questions, is there all in favor of the motion say aye?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion passes. Thank you. There are two motions from the executive committee. The first one, Professor Chris is going to, Lawrence can bring that to you.
This first motion I'll be presenting is the amendment to the timely publication. So this is an amendment that largely rose out of the issues with System Affairs motions from last meeting and some of the perceived ambiguities about the language, including things along the lines of what expiration meant for a motion and that sort of thing. So this motion attempts to clarify some of that language and make things a little easier to navigate as far as that goes. The original, Gene, if you'll scroll down just a little bit. There should be some more language there. No, sorry, that's...
Sorry, we don't seem to have the right document up there. Let's take a moment, if you don't mind. Sorry, Andy is saying something, but I can't. Do you have a... You're right. Yeah, I'm sorry. That is the right thing, Gene. I'm wrong. So I think the really substantive changes here fall just under agenda, sort of where we see voting on both the left and the right, and that changes some language that used to say any motion ruled substantive by the chair of the Palmetto College campus's faculty senate webpage within 10 business days of its inclusion, or else it shall expire. The proposal made by this motion is to replace that language with language that reads, the Senate shall not give final consideration to any substantive legislative matter unless it has been presented at a previous meeting published on the Palmetto College campus's faculty website within 10 business days of its presentation and then included in the current agenda. The person or committee making the motion shall be responsible for its publication on the website. And this is the real substance of that motion.
This motion comes from the committee, does not require a second. Is that discussion? Let's go to line.
Kevin Langster, this seems to be an embittered reaction to the fact that we were able to override a chair's ruling by a two-thirds vote. But to me, a two-thirds vote is normal standard procedure by Senates and other organizations who use Robert rules. And if more than two-thirds of the people this Senate want to change that rule at any one time, then they've been elected and can do so.
I agree with you, and I'll point out that the same mechanism that you're describing would be just as successful with this language. So we're not trying to change or in any way affect the ability of the Senate to make adjustments in that two-thirds suspension of the rules mechanism. So much as we're trying to clarify what it is that we are asking committees or individuals who make motions to do leading up to that, so that perhaps it's not as necessary to do that in the future.
That's a very simple. Once a motion has been presented to the body, it becomes a property of the body. If the chair rules it substantive, what you're saying, as I understand it, is now it goes back to the committee to make sure it gets on the website? Is that what this is about?
Well, if we go back to the original timely publication language, the committee had the responsibility for having this substantive motion published on the motions website for the Senate within a certain span of days. I think we said 10 working days. In order to give everyone enough time to look at the document before we voted on it at the next meeting. We're not asking for the committee to reconsider anything. We're just clarifying that it is the committee, as opposed to, say, the secretary's job to make sure that motion is published.
Tom Bragg, Salkehatchee, can you discuss the rationale? It was specifically the systems affairs motion and what happened when we had a change of leadership in that committee that brought this up, correct?
I don't know that I can really speak to the systems affairs side of the rationale. My understanding is that system affairs felt some responsibility to its previous incarnation to bring that motion back, even though, as we heard, they did not strongly support that motion. But I don't know, as far as, you know, rationale for that, I don't know. There was a lot of conversation sort of preceding and following the previous Senate meeting, which led several of us on executive committee to believe that there was confusion both about the execution of timely publication and the reason for timely publication. So the rationale from executive committee for presenting this amendment is simply to try to clarify that confusion and you know, again, avoid circumstances in the future that will either require suspension of rules or see the expiration of motions.
Thank you. That's what
I want. I can ask a question referring to that. What is going to happen at the end on the April meeting is the outgoing chair, is it the outgoing chair's responsibility to have it posted? That's where our confusion was, because it was not posted. So we brought three motions back again.
I mean, that would be my understanding, that as the chair who shepherded that motion being made, I would feel that it was that incarnation of the committee's responsibility to get the posting, largely because we don't know the lineup for next year's committee at that point, right? So so I would assume that in order to meet the within 10 working days rule, it would have to be done by that current committee. But I don't know that it specifically, you know, that this language specifically speaks to that so much as I'm just thinking that the mechanism would require that I guess the short answer to that is, if the committee who makes that motion in April does not publish it, it won't be published in time, I think is the long and short of it.
Pastor Murray Sumter, is there a clearly articulated mechanism whereby the committee chair could get this published? In other words,
there is. If you go to the motions page within the PCC Senate's homepage, there's a full page that goes step by step how to make it happen.
Thank you.
Patrick Saucier, Extended University. I have a question about the days, and I know this is going to sound really picky, but what constitutes a working day and what constitutes a business day is open to interpretation, and that what constitutes a calendar day is not. And that I think that if you're going to make a general rule, calendar days are superior to other softer terms like business or working.
I personally, I agree with you. The previous debate that led to the original timely publication motion, I think, demonstrated that the majority of the Senate preferred thinking in terms of working days, and so that's how that happened. I imagine that the Senate would entertain a motion to amend, if that's what you're offering, though.
It would be common understanding, I think, that a working day is normally Monday through Friday, unless there's a holiday in there. If you specify just days, then what are you going to do with the holidays?
I agree that that's a common understanding, but unfortunately we're a room full of uncommon people. And anybody who's served on a committee and has minced words with other committee members knows that these things are open to very broad interpretations. That if we amended it to say that it has to be published within 14 calendar days, that certainly encompasses 10 business days or 10 working days in almost every circumstance, because our meetings are always on Fridays. So 11 days would accomplish, you know, would be two Mondays through Fridays, but just 14 calendar days before. I move that we amend that.
Is that the motion?
Yes.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Second is made. Discussion of that motion. Hearing none, all in favor of the amended motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. I hear one aye and Christopher no. Looks like the toss. If you're in favor of the motion, raise your hand. If you're opposed, say raise your hand. I think the ayes have it. The amendment with the motion passes. Now back to the original motion as amended. Is there further discussion of that motion?
While I assume this will be ruled substantive, since it is a change to the procedures as outlined in the manual, I intend to vote against it as a fix for something that's not broken.
James Lancaster. The thing that's broken that this is actually specifically fixing, we sort of operate under the assumption that we don't unvote on something that's been ruled substantive. And that's why the word expire works. It turns out that's not actually a rule. The fact that the thing that says you can't vote on something is that the thing that got deleted, which said we won't vote on it unless it appears in the agenda. So the weird situation we were in last time was the thing appeared on the agenda. We were allowed to vote on it, whether or not it expired by this rule. This is just a rephrasing that clarifies it and makes that rule actually function. And it's enforcing the, if something is substantive, then we don't vote on it that day. That we have always operated under, but was never actually a rule. Also, the two-thirds thing is not going away. A two-thirds majority can suspend any rule in the bylaws. It's weird to write down next to some rules that a two-thirds majority can suspend this rule and not others. If it was included, it would make a substantive change to this.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'm ruling this to be a substantive motion, and we'll take it up next time. There's a second motion coming from the executive committee, and I'm going to invite Professor Andy Yingst to join the table up here. Were you going to participate in that presentation? Please.
There's a motion coming from executive committee. They've invited me to present it on their behalf. I'll continue to clarify I'm not actually on the executive committee. We're doing a bunch of things in here. So rationale for proposed revision. Well, let me scroll down. Can we scroll down to what the changes are? Oh, that's good, the red stuff is in red. One big thing, changing the phrase vice chair to chair elect makes it more clear the strange rules about vice chair. You use vice chair for somebody who's elected every year. Our vice chair is not elected every year. Chair elect is the word for someone who's going to be chair the next year. We changed the phrase vice chair to chair elect to make that more clear. That's not a change in how the office works, but it makes the name reflect that this is the way the office works. Is this the same as mine? At the final meeting? Oh, okay. The second big thing is we're changing the way at-large members work. The current standing, the weird problem we have with the way the elections work is we say we elect the people to these positions, and then after the election, it must turn out to be the fact that we have one person from every campus. If you have this weird rule on who can get elected, then you're not actually electing the people. Like, you're left in a weird catch position. If we elect the wrong thing, did the election happen? What's the deal? So that's what this is clarifying. It's removing the requirement that every campus have exactly one person. It's allowing more than one person, so the election functions as an actual election. And we're changing the way at-large members on the executive committee work to be that any campus who doesn't already have somebody, some campuses may have multiple people, but if you don't have somebody on the executive committee as chair-elect or chair or old chair or secretary, then you may elect an at-large member. That at-large member is just elected by your campus body. That's a technical thing because you don't know whether or not you need one until after that meeting has happened. So that election can happen anytime after the executive committee has been set. So the new phrasing is the executive committee serves as a planning body, It is composed of the chair, chair-elect, secretary, immediate past chair, and possibly one or more members at large. This involved a few changes to the way the nominating committee works. Can we scroll down to the bottom of the next page, page 5 to 6? At the beginning of the academic year, the senatorial delegation from each Palmetto College campus shall choose from among its members one representative to serve on the nominating committee. This was not clear before. This committee, chaired by the chair-elect of Senate, changing the phrase vice chair to chair-elect. Does this match that one? Yeah, some things that were noted. It's the same document. It's just I have things that are listed as proposed changes in red that got accepted in this version of the document. Can you see what happens if you click on review there? Does that change anything to red? No?
Yeah, okay. So the simple markup. Show markup.
Some of it was in red, it's more on white. It may just be a bit different platform. Yeah, I think the things that are in red were the things that got changed. Well, I don't know. We don't have it as clear what the differences between the two versions are.
I think if she clicks show markup.
Can you click show markup?
Show markup.
I can't see it all from here. Boom! Awesome. Now it's all lined up and everything. Okay, so this makes it more clear. Let's go back to the top and go through this real quick. The phrase vice chair got changed to chair-elect at the top of page 4. The faculty manual liaison got added to the list of people who get elected at the end of the academic year. That was not explicit before. The thing about... If we scroll up to the top of this chart... A little more. That's the one, right there. Faculty manual liaison officer gets elected on the last year of Senate. That was not clear. Any campus not already represented may elect an at-large member to the executive committee. It's not phrased as being required to be a current senator anymore. Anyone who's eligible to serve on Senate may become an at-large member because... if you can elect someone, if you could do two elections to elect them to the Senate and then at large, you might as well do it in one. Scrolling down to what the executive committee does, the rules about the member at large got deleted there. Member at large nominated, dot, 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 all that stuff's gone. Vice chair got changed to chair elect. Scroll down to the page 5 or 6 stuff. The timing of the nominating committee happenings got clarified here. At the beginning of the academic year, the senatorial delegation from each Palmetto College campus shall choose from among its members one representative to serve on the nominating committee. This committee, chaired by the chair-elect of the Senate, shall present at the Senate's penultimate, that means second to last, meeting of each academic year a slate of nominees or positions to be elected by the Senate. This is being moved up a meeting so that nominations from the floor become more meaningful. We have the list of people who have been presented by the nominating committee. Then we have a space between meetings to allow for more nominees to happen so that you don't have to decide whether you're running on the day you found out who else was running. Can we scroll down to the next paragraph? The chair of the nominating committee, that got deleted. So call the meeting. They can figure out the dates on their own. Prior to the penultimate meeting of the Palmetto College campuses, the same things happen. It gets submitted to the executive committee, and then can we scroll down to the next page? Can we scroll down some more? That's what I'm looking for. Okay. So the stuff that happened that was listed under nominating committee is being moved to the section on elections. The section on elections just used to say nominations shall be made by the nominating committee, blah, blah, blah. So we're moving the rules of elections from the section under the nominating committee to the section called elections. At the beginning of the business session of the penultimate Senate meeting, having received the list of nominees from the nominating committee, the executive committee shall report these nominees and call for additional nominations from the floor. That was happening in the last meeting. At the end of the final Senate meeting, the chair of the Senate shall again call for nominees from the floor. You get one more chance to run from the floor and conduct a vote by secret ballot for each of these positions. If you find out that the slate that the nominating committee came up with was terrible, you have a space between meetings to propose changes happen from the floor. Candidate receiving a majority shall be declared elected. If no candidate receives a majority, this is standard language. Can we go down to officers? The officers, I'm changing the phrase Palmetto College Campus's faculty manual liaison officer to just faculty manual liaison officer. I'm fancy enough with four words. The secretary shall serve a term of 1 year or until a successor is elected. Here's a little key thing. We added the phrase or until a successor is elected to all the term limits of all the positions. This is a thing I learned reading Robert's Rules Forums. It is a nice phrase to put in because the rules under which you remove someone from office under Robert's rules are super complicated and gross. And if you add this little phrase, you just need to vote, move to elect a replacement, and you can do it easy peasy Japanesey. The person designated to serve as chair will serve for 3 years. Chair-elect, okay. Executive committee members assume office immediately upon election. That was unclear before. Although usually elected at the end of the fall semester, the manual liaison officer begins office following the summer meeting of the Board of Trustees. You want the manual liaison officer to keep their position until the end of the manual liaison officer's job, which is getting the manual through to the Board of Trustees. The chair-elect and the secretary shall be nominated and elected at the last Senate meeting. So that's changing the name of chair-elect and adding the faculty manual liaison officer. That's all that's happening in this section. And then at the very end, vice chair is changed to chair-elect one more time on the very last page. Those are all the changes. Vice chair to chair-elect, adding or until a successor is elected, adding the faculty manual liaison officer as a person who is elected at the end of the year, and allowing repetition on the executive committee if we vote a repetition in the executive committee, but allowing as many at-large members as necessary to get every campus represented on the executive committee. Any questions?
This motion comes from the committee, so it does need a second. Is there a discussion?
That could happen if we elected that to happen.
Any other questions or discussions? I rule this motion to be substantive, so we'll deal with it next time. Are there any other motions from the floor? Hearing none, are there any announcements? Nothing exciting happening in anybody's life that we need to talk about? Hearing none, is there a motion that we adjourn?
So moved.
Then we are stand adjourned.